Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me this evening is Matt, the mucusy minion.
Yum.
Yeah, exactly. So you're a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm getting over a cold, so I'm going to hopefully not hack up along on air here, but...
If you do, I'll take photos and, like, YouTube that, and it'll go viral.
You know?
Go viral. Get it? Dude, I'm funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. If I do hack one up, though, you know, I might be able to get a lot for it on the black market.
Something like that. I hear kidneys are going for, like, 10 grand, so someone or other.
Might not want mine, though.
No, probably not. Not your kidneys. Not with how much you drink. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So, it's going to be our last live show for the next... 2 weeks, actually, just because we're going to be traveling out to lovely Las Vegas for SHOT Show 2015. This is going to be your first SHOT Show, Minion.
Yes, it will.
Nah. Well, get prepared to hate me. So, no, it should be a lot of fun, a lot of walking. We're going to see some cool new stuff. We've been invited to a couple of range days that should be kind of slick. One of them, if we end up going to it, we can't actually talk about anything we see and or shoot there, but... I'm sure it'll be full of cool, cool stuff. Not to mention the normal media range day. See, I'm just like vague radioing here. It's like vague booking, but on the radio. I'm a cool kid and you're not, neener, neener. No, I'm not. I'm not a cool kid at all. So tonight's show, what we're going to do, we've got some questions from the Facebook users. If we answer your question on the air, we send you a patch, morale patch from Violent Little Machine Shop, who is one of my secret addictions. So, and we've got, what, 7 or 8 questions there. If you want to call in, you can. I'm not going to give you the number, though, so you really, really need to want to call in and, like, actually look up the number and stuff. And if we take your call, we'll at least write down your name and address and probably forget to mail you out a patch, but we'll do our best. So, and my apologies to Jim Sadowski, who is a frequent listener who was promised a patch several episodes ago, Minion, and... Someone, I'm not naming any names or pointing any fingers, while I point both fingers, forgot to send his out. So anyway, what else is going on? Oh, got started on the new test rifle that I'm still not officially announcing, but it should be, we're about 142 rounds into that. I actually, so far so good, not that I expected there would be any problems, but I'm liking it more than I thought I would, at least initially, just because... You know, I just put 20,000 rounds for another rifle. That's what I'm used to. Picking up something different is feels weird, but I'm still doing okay with it. So hey, anyway, why don't you ask me a couple questions just so I don't keep talking and not saying anything?
Battling on.
Yeah, I'm good at that. That's why everyone listens, right? And the metrics just dropped.
No one's listening anymore.
Yeah. Let's hope.
All
anyway,
right, let's start with some questions.
Sure.
The first one is from Samuel Derek Roberts. Wants to know the pros or cons of a piston versus gas AR platform, and are they worth the extra money?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, just since the new rifle that I am testing is a piston-driven AR. The last one was a direct impingement. My old answer would have been, no, I don't think it matters that much unless you're doing 2 of 3 things. And yes, I said 2. So you need to be able to answer yes to at least 2 of these for a piston to really make sense for you. This is my old answer. I don't know what my new answer is going to be just because I don't have enough rounds for the piston AR that I'm testing yet. But my old answer, if you're running the gun suppressed, short-barreled, or full auto, 2 of those 3, then a piston makes a lot of sense for you. After my experience with the Knights Armament, the 20,000 rounds for direct impingement gun, no failures, no cleanings, I don't know. I know a lot of people like to talk about, well, the direct impingement poops where it eats and blows all this stuff back into the receiver of the gun and can cause malfunctions. That's not what I found to be true. What I did find to be true is that whenever anything would get in the gun that could possibly affect its functioning, with all the gases being vented back into the action, what it tends to do is just blow all the crud out of there. The inside of that gun was absolutely filthy, except the parts that were vital to keeping the gun running, they were relatively clean. That's because nothing was accumulating there. You know, the face of the bolt looked fine. You know, the bolt carrier itself looked god-awful, but, you know, the parts that actually matter were not really being affected. I've noticed, in whether or not it turns out to be true long-term, and this is anecdotal and could just be, you know, differences between two rifles and not indicative of either platform, but I've noticed the piston gun's recoil impulse is different than a direct impingement gun. I think I like it better, though I don't know for sure. That's something we'll explore a little bit more. What I'm planning on doing is getting a comparable direct impingement gun that will be the same barrel length and have the same muzzle device as the piston gun that I'm testing, and actually try and do some videos to measure recoil. We'll see. So anyway, that's my semi-answer to that question.
That is your take on that one.
Yeah. So what's our next one?
Next one is from Mark Apperson. In your opinion, for a self-defense, not at home situation, do you prefer a pistol with a laser dot or regular fixed sights? In your findings, which is more accurate?
So part of the problem with that question is you're confusing accuracy with the sighting system used. And accuracy is going to be determined by the skill level of the shooter and the mechanical capabilities of whatever firearm you're shooting. Accuracy for me and accuracy for you are going to be two different things based off of how our eyes work, mine versus yours or mine versus the minions or whomever's. In my personal experience, just because of how my eyes work, if I'm going to be shooting a gun for group, I like having a laser on the gun just because it allows me to very, very easily repeat the point of aim without having too many outside influences. As far as speed goes, I'm faster with iron sights, but that's not to say the laser can't be just as fast. Todd Green, who I am a fan of a lot of the things that he's done in the past, has said several different times that a laser is faster than iron sights if you actually know how to use one. Also, too, the lighting conditions you find yourself in are going to be important to accurately answer that question. I don't think it's an either-or situation. I think they both complement one another. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that where the laser really, really, really shines, pun semi-intended, is at night. As far as sighting systems at night goes, there's really not much that beats it. I know some people will say a red dot sight mounted on a pistol is better at night. I don't know. I've not shot enough of it, and I can actually see some potential problems for that, but I do know for a fact that a laser at night is really, really hard to beat. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't limit yourself to just one or the other. I mean, if you've got the funds and can train to use both of them effectively, do that. So anyway, we got to go to break. When we get back, more of your questions. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. So, see, they still haven't got me ad copy for the
It sounds so month. Naked without the deal at the end.
Yeah, I know. Well, the deal's done, so I'm not going to advertise a deal. But anyway, see, conversations not to have live on air. So we're answering Facebook users' questions tonight, and pretty much if we answer your question, you get a free patch from Violent Little Machine Shop. If you want to call in, you can. I guess I could give them the number. I don't know. Maybe
make them work. Make them work a little bit. Just a little bit.
Maybe I'll give it to them in the third segment. Maybe if they want free stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway. The Minion has more questions for me. Mr. Minion.
I do. The next one is from Adam Roth. Do you think gun forms would be better if they required submission of a valid driver's license? Also, usernames could only be real first and last names, and avatars could only be the picture on the license.
So you mean being accountable for the things you say online? Would that be a good idea? No, that sounds like a terrible idea. No, that'd be awesome. I think that if you are unwilling to back up what you say by using your real name on the internet, that what you have to say is probably not very worthwhile, with a few exceptions. Now, if you're in a job where personal security is an actual thing to be concerned about, those people do exist, not nearly as many as pretend like it's a thing for them to worry about. But part of the problem is that there are very, very, very many people online that are willing to speak from a position of authority when they clearly have no idea what they're talking about. My favorite from just the other day was I was having a conversation with someone or other about, here's a good segue. We've got a new YouTube channel. If you want to look for us, Ballistic Radio on YouTube, we're putting up instructional videos, things where we're trying to break down some of the gun myths and shooting myths that you hear. Anyway, one of the videos I posted was about whether or not using a safety on a long gun, specifically an AR-15, slows you down. It doesn't. Not by any measurable time, but one of the people I had this conversation with in the comments section, which, don't read the comments section, unless you want to drink a lot. One of the arguments, though, was he was like, well, I don't train to use my safety. But it turned out he doesn't train at all, but he couldn't come up with any. You know, I started talking to him about why don't you use your safety on your long gun, and he didn't have anything to say, and, you know, just kept making all these excuses, and he finally said, well, I don't train at all, I just work a lot. And I'm like, so you're arguing training with the guy that goes and trains as his job. And the fact he was willing to have that argument, I'm not saying he was wrong. Well, yeah, he was wrong, at least the way he was presenting his argument. But just the fact that he was willing to have a knockdown, drag-out argument with someone online that he fully admitted he had no clue what he was talking about and was still arguing was kind of like, really? I mean, okay, but really? And that's not to say that, you know, I'm always right, because I'm not at all. And anyone that follows the show will, you know, be able to attest to that, because they've heard me say things that I've recanted as I've learned more or my position has changed. But so, yeah, online would be better if everyone was held accountable for what they said. I think that you would see a lot less bad information passed along. I think that you would also just, people would be nicer. So, and nicer is good. Anyway.
I was going to say, just, do you think, though, that that would be sort of a violation of freedom of speech, though?
Well, no. Okay. So, I get, like, if I call someone an idiot online, and one of the other questions that I'm going to indirectly answer, and I'll send this guy a patch, even though we're not actually asking his question online, or on the air, was, why do I take the time to argue with people, was pretty much what he was saying. And the reason for that is because I'm not sure. I know there are a lot of people that are reading the conversation that aren't commenting on the conversation. So, but I will occasionally, if someone says something completely stupid or just derails the topic, you know, too badly to be saved, I'll ban them. And everyone's like, well, that's a dictatorship and freedom of speech. And freedom of speech doesn't exist on private property. You know, the Ballistic Radio Facebook page, I encourage, you know, a fair exchange of different views and opinions and ideas, and that's fine. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to have the final word, you know, because I'm the guy that gets to decide whether or not you still get to play. Is that fair? No, not really, but I'm not really concerned about that. I'm concerned about passing good information along. And well, that's...
Yeah. Life is not fair.
No. No, it is not. So
we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. But, yeah, I don't know. Freedom of speech, yes, that exists, sort of. But, you know, I think that part of the problem, too, is that all too often when really stupid things are being said, the people that know better don't say anything about it because it just annoys them and hurts their brain, and they don't want to take the time to correct people, and I think maybe they should. You know, not saying I'm always right in how I handle that, but I do have, at the very least, good intentions. And I know there's a road paved somewhere with good intentions. But anyway, let's ask an actual question that matters.
All right, next one from Joe Hardings. Muzzle brake versus flash hiders for a carbine.
Ah, muzzle brake versus flash hiders for a carbine. So what they're talking about, for people that don't know, and I'm going to answer this from the perspective of an AR-15 just because that's what I shoot the most of, but a muzzle brake is going to be something that goes on the barrel of the gun that helps reduce muzzle lift and or recoil or both, felt recoil, excuse me. And a flash hider is essentially just something that's going to reduce the visible signature of a rifle being fired. It does nothing to reduce the sound. Those are suppressors and or silencers. I actually prefer the term silencers, but you know, that's just because that's what's on the original patent, despite what everyone will say on the... Anyway, tangent. I prefer flash hiders. The reason for that is most of the brakes and or compensators that I've ever used actually do too good of a job. And what I end up doing, at least for how I shoot, is having to pick the muzzle of the gun up to keep it on target, which is opposite of what I want. At this point, with where I'm at with a rifle, I can shoot a non-compensated AR-15 and have zero muzzle lift just with a flash hider. Flash hiders are quieter and less obnoxious to stand next to. So if you're shooting on a line with a bunch of guys and you've got a brake on, you're probably not anyone's friend, you know. And that's especially on an indoor range. Somebody shooting a compensated gun and you're standing next to him, it's kind of miserable. You know, on different calibers that are not 5.56, maybe, you know, I don't know. It depends on your level of skill and what you're wanting. So
what is it that makes a muzzle brake louder?
Just the direction that the gases are vented is my understanding of that. Thank you for asking me a question that I'm not able to give the scientific answer to, though, because, no, yeah, just the direction that the gases of the round... Generally, the way the brake works is you've got cuts in a piece of metal that are going to vent the gases as the bullet passes, directions that will either pull the gun off of the shoulder or push it down at least a little bit. The problem with that is then you've got those gases being vented different directions and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, they are certainly louder, though, as you can attest when we had the MAMS brake on the Knight's Armor and it sounded like a cannon going off. So anyway, next question.
The next one is from Anonymous.
Ooh.
So, in the greater tactical defensive shooting community, why are women held to a different, quote-unquote, lower standard of expectations?
Huh. And I actually know who asked this question. She's an incredibly gifted female shooter. And I don't know if gifted is the right word, because she just busts her butt and goes to a lot of classes and trains really hard. And hey, go figure, if you bust your butt and go to a lot of classes and train really hard, you get good. In discussing this with her before the show, what she pointed out was that for whatever reason, let's say someone is getting their spouse or significant other into shooting and they start talking about getting a gun for the little lady or something like that, there just seems to be this expectation of, you know, their skill level will be significantly lower than their own, and it's not something that will ever meet and or exceed their ability. The other thing that is prevalent in this industry, what's a nice way to say this, are the female shooters that are very talented models that happen to do that with guns, and then for whatever reason are looked at as sources of information. The derogatory term for that is a gun bunny. You know, I don't necessarily want to get into that so much, but I think it does speak to an underlying thing where, and I don't know if it's the fact that, you know, they get into it for the wrong reasons, or they're told they're not going to be able to do well, so they don't do well, or what it is. But, you know, I think the people that are interested in getting good get good. You know, Julie Golub, who is an amazing shooter, man, woman, you know, child, whomever, you know, just an amazing shooter. She's good because she decided to get good and put the work in. I think that is something that anyone is capable of. I don't know what we do in the industry to encourage that more. It's kind of a catch-22, just because for whatever reason, a lot of the times when we try and be encouraging, we end up being patronizing, or I don't know. I don't know that there's a good answer that I could give. I certainly think it exists, just because I've seen it. You know, but I don't know. I think that if we expect the same thing out of everyone, you know, and treat everyone the same, that's probably a good place to start. I probably didn't answer her question very well, but that's about as far into it as I'm willing to get without being able to edit the recording and or video. So maybe I'll cover this on a video or something like that sometime. Did get invited out to the Ladies' Choice Awards at SHOT Show, so maybe I'll ask some female shooters out there what they think. Anyway, we've got to go to break. When we get back, more of your questions. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Barrett, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium air pattern rifles, including Knights Armament. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. And see, it was funny. I don't think Jake meant to play Highway to the Danger Zone when we were doing the ad for TopGunSupply.com, but I am so happy that he did. I can't even begin to tell you. So, thumbs up, Jake. Yeah. He's like, hey, cool. So, anyway. Oh, you know what I forgot to do? I was supposed to give a shout-out to the Oregon Ducks and wish them luck in destroying Ohio State tomorrow. Well, one of my friends in the Naval Special Warfare community asked me to do it, so I can only imagine that they're going to lose, and that's the only reason he's thinking that, like, he needs to ask me to give them a shout-out and wish them luck is, like, that's the only chance they have is if some, you know, radio show host from Cincinnati does some. I don't know. I don't follow college ball, but that, and he promised me free stuff if I did it. So, hey, I kind of did what he asked, sort of, maybe. Not all the way. Anyway, so tonight we are answering the Facebook users' questions, giving them a free morale patch from Violent Little Machine Shop. And I'm just mentioning Violent Little Machine Shop because they do cool stuff. I actually bought all these patches, paid full retail for them. They didn't give them or anything, but give credit where credit's due. They do cool stuff, so check them out. Anyway, on with the questions. So what do we have next?
One from Stephen Head. What do you think the best AR platform is? 5.56, 300 Blackout, 308, 458 SOCOM?
Well, I think he meant to say caliber there, but sure.
Yeah.
See, that keeps going back to the misconception that people have where there's going to be one do-everything caliber. You know, they all do different things well. Well, yeah. If I had to pick just one of them, I'm actually a fan of 300 Blackout. I know that a lot of people will talk about 300 Blackout and say things like, well, it's got the terminal ballistics of a pistol round and blah, 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 blah. And the thing that they're forgetting with that is that, yes, while 300 Blackout does incredibly well suppressed, they do have these things called supersonic cartridges for them that do really, really well. We've got... you know, what do we test? 110 grain 300 Blackout, the TSX.
Yeah.
And those things were impressive, you know, and that's a supersonic cartridge that is giving you 30 caliber performance out of a very ergonomic platform that people that shoot 5.56 are used to handling. With a magazine change, you can go to subsonic ammunition and have something that is incredibly quiet. And I don't think people really understand how quiet a subsonic 300 Blackout is. I know we were shooting some over the late summer, early autumn, and I'm like, what season is that? and it was impressive just because you could hear the shot, kind of, but what you could hear much, much louder was the impact of the round hitting something. you know, 50, 75, 100 yards away. And when the impact of the round hitting something is the loud part of the equation, that's pretty impressive. That having been said, I'm fine with 5.56. I know that 5.56 is looked at as a weak cartridge, or affectionately known as a poodle shooter, amongst other things. You know, the people that say that, I don't know that I want to call them the names that I want to call them on the air, but it's like anything else. If you use quality ammunition and you train to put rounds where they need to go, well then, that's generally what matters. I have one 300 blackout rifle, and I think five 5.56 rifles. I'd have to actually stop and count. Something that was not mentioned in that list that I'm a fan of is 6.8 SPC, but, you know, that's an entirely different show. I don't think it matters that much, you know. Get what you can afford, train with it, you know, go from there. So, anyway.
All right, next one from Robert Wozniak. I believe that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
Not, I'm sorry. How do you convince your spouse to carry?
Well, I'm glad you asked. You don't. If you have to convince someone to carry, they don't need to be carrying. You know, it's a personal decision. That's like convincing someone what kind of underwear they should wear. You know, it's like, well, okay. Just because something works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for them. And the other thing, too, is that there are a lot of things to be thought about before you actually start carrying a firearm, and they're not things that you can force someone through. You know, making the decision as to whether or not you are morally capable of taking another human being's life, there are some people that are not, that would rather die than hurt someone else or take someone else's life. You know, I don't personally feel that way, but there's nothing wrong with the people that do. Convincing someone to do something, though, is a terrible idea. They don't want to carry, they're not going to carry. And even if you do, through peer pressure, convince them to do it, they're not going to do it well, and they're not going to take it seriously. So the only thing you can do is present information if they're willing to receive it. You know, other than that, you don't want to be... You don't want to be the dudes out in the shirt and ties on your bicycles saying, "Excuse me, sir, do you have a moment to talk about concealed carry?" That's not helpful. If anything, it turns people off of it. You know, take someone out shooting if they are willing to go. Show them it's fun, you know, and go from there. I think that we need to sort of approach it from that direction a little bit more. You know, as much fun as it is to just doom and destruction everybody, and, you know, oh my God, all these terrible things can happen to you if they don't carry a gun. Well, yeah, they could, but, you know, making someone really understand that and realize it is not, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. And it's, I don't think it's something you can force on someone. I mean, you're a good example, Minion, just because you had your concealed carry permit, but you very rarely carried a gun up until, what, the last year or two?
Yeah, about that. And a lot of it's been learning and, you know, trying to find the right gear and the right way to carry. And
actually, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. But
it's you know, I don't think it's a decision-making process that you can force someone through, is it?
No. Like you said, I think obviously a lot of people, I think, in the gun community want everyone to be armed and carry a gun. But you just have to realize that it's not everyone's prerogative. It's not everyone that can, like you said, they might not have that moral
certainty
or
the drive even to take it seriously enough, which is actually going to segue into another question that we'll get into next segment, but unless it's the next one on the list, and if it is, we can ask that one.
I don't know which one it might be. I think it is the same one from Stuart Cleveland. Should I discourage friends and acquaintances that are clearly not proficient with firearms from carrying one?
Discourage? No, I wouldn't say that. I think you could encourage them to take it more seriously. The problem is, you know, I think that the right to self-defense and self-preservation is an inherent right, and I don't think we should be discouraging anyone from practicing, you know, from equipping themselves to best handle whatever situations they run across. That having been said, It goes back into how do you make someone realize they don't know something? Well, that's hard. I mean, that's really hard to do. Dunning-Kruger, which if you look that up, D-U-N-N-I-N-G hyphen Kruger, like Freddy, K-R-U-G-E-R. Pretty much if you don't know something, the more certain you are that you do know something is, I'm paraphrasing it and I'm probably doing a bad job of it. But anyway, you know, I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. The other problem too is that you don't necessarily need to be highly trained or trained at all to effectively defend yourself with a gun. Now, I've said that in the past and I've said it in articles before and then people get confused and think that I'm suggesting, well, you don't need training to use a gun. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there are plenty of cases that show that untrained individuals, if they're armed, can successfully defend themselves. That having been said, I think the higher level of training you achieve, the less likely you are to ever need a gun in the first place, which is a weird catch-22, but it seems to follow. Unless you're in a profession where hunting down bad people is your job, you become much, much more capable of avoiding situations. I know for a fact that I've avoided several just because I saw them from much further off than I would have, you know, 400 hours of private firearms and self-defense instruction sooner. I said that really stupidly. I saw it sooner than I would have if I was less trained, which was what I was trying to cleverly say and failing at. But yeah, you know, discouraging people from caring, no. I think that giving people examples of why what they're doing is maybe not well thought out, yeah, that's not a bad idea. The problem is that, once again, you start alienating people and you try and educate them. You know, people don't want to hear information. They're not going to hear it. And how do you fix that? Well, hell, I don't know. If I knew, I'd be making a lot more money than I'm making, you know, and I'd be a lot more effective at this job than I am. So, yeah, that's my take on that. We got about 30 seconds left. If you want to ask the question, I'll think about it during the break.
All right, the next question we are going to have is David Lee Torres, backup guns, their application to civilians, what are some good options and carry methods?
You couldn't have taken longer to read that question?
I was trying, but, you know.
Backup guns. Well, that's something to think about. Are they necessary? That depends. We'll talk about that a little bit more. We've got to go to commercial break. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use guns. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions gun. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. So, tonight we are answering Facebook users' questions, giving away free stuff, and in general having fun like we do every show. So, the question that was asked before the break, if you want to read it again, just real quick.
Yeah, he was asking, David Lee Torres was asking about backup guns, their application to civilians, and what are some good options and carry methods for them, well, if you so choose.
I don't think it hurts if you can carry one without affecting your desire to carry a firearm. What I mean by that, if you make it so uncomfortable that you end up not carrying anything, that's bad. Let's see what else obvious I can state. Is there an application for private citizens? Well, now, if you end up needing your primary gun and it doesn't work, then yes, having the second gun is certainly important. What are the likelihoods of that happening? Slim to none. You know, I carry a second gun on a semi-regular basis just because I've had enough guns break that it sticks in my mind. That having been said, you know, you could make the argument as a private citizen that, no, it's not nearly as critical as it is for a uniform law enforcement or undercover law enforcement, just because of the risk profile that they have versus the one that you as a civilian have. So no, it's not a bad idea. Are you going to get killed on the street if you don't do it? No, probably not. I can think of all sorts of good reasons to do it. I can't really think of any bad reasons to do it other than, here's a bad reason to do it. If you're an open carrier, open carrying two guns, well, no, I wouldn't do that. And the reason for that is because then you have two guns to keep track of, and it's already hard enough to keep track of one openly carried firearm. Just ask the numerous number of law enforcement individuals that get their guns taken from them or have attempts made to take their gun from them. And then we could get into the open carry debate, and I don't want to do that at all. If you're going to carry a second gun, you know, smaller firearm generally, though, you could, if you're an appendix carrier, just carry mirror on your left side appendix, which would be your spleen. No, wait. sorry. Spleen carry. No, you could, there's all sorts of ways to do that. Pocket carry is very popular. I'll say in the wintertime is generally when I'm most likely to have a second gun. The reason for that, I can put one in my coat pocket. It's much easier to access. It's right there. I've got my hand on it. You know, ankle holsters for a second gun make a lot of sense. You know, it sort of depends on your situation. I know that's not a real good answer, but that's the answer that I have. So, anyway. Next question.
Next one is from John Gaz. The best method of carry for medical gear, EDC, and what to carry for optimum balance of supplies?
Caleb Causey would be the best person to ask about that from Lone Star Medics. So I guess that means I need to have him back on the show sometime soon so we can talk about it. But
wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, and they've actually got a tactical medicine conference coming up in March in Texas that I need to post the details on. I know I'm going to be going out to that. I know I'm going to try really hard to go out to it. I'll say that. I think if you're going to have anything, a tourniquet is probably the most important thing that you can carry on your person. It is a specialized tool, but when you need one, you really need one, and nothing else will quite do. I know people talk about improvising tourniquets out of all sorts of things, and that's stupid, and they've not ever actually tried to do it, would be my guess, because when you start trying to do that, you quickly realize that it doesn't work ideally, if at all. So, best way to carry it, I've got one in my back right pocket right now that's got a tourniquet in it, some combat gauze that's got quick clotting agent, and also some nitrile gloves. So, you know, I carry it pretty much everywhere I go. It's about the size of my wallet. I know Lone Star Medics does a ankle medical kit, I want to say. There's some other ones, too, that you can look online and just look for. And I'll have the minion do some research, and we'll post some links up tomorrow or something like that. Not that we're not already busy enough, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you remember exactly. I know I took one of Caleb's classes up at Polypalooza, and I know just a lot of people talk about carrying first aid kits in their car and saying that it'd be good enough, but isn't it something like your femoral artery will bleed out in 30 seconds or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. You need to have a tourniquet on you. Robin Hopkins, who is a New Mexico sheriff's deputy. I'm sorry, Robin, if I'm getting this wrong. I know I am. But anyway, she was shot by a active shooter, hit in the leg with a 7.62x39 round, and the only thing that saved her life was the quick application of a tourniquet that they had just issued. You know, Robin is the wife of a friend of mine. We did a t-shirt fundraiser for her. She's still recovering from that years later, but the only reason she's alive is because she had a tourniquet on her person and could access it on her person. The thing about a tourniquet, or really anything you don't carry on you, in certain situations, it might as well be on a different planet. You know, if you have a tourniquet 25 feet away and you've just been shot in the leg and can't walk, by the time you drag yourself there, you're probably already dead. So, something to think about. A couple minutes left. What else do we got?
Let's go with Rob Rollins. Proper testing / trial before designating a firearm as your personal vehicle carry nightstand weapon.
500 rounds of Full Metal Jacket at least. And I'd say 100 rounds at least of whatever carry ammo you're going to have through it, more if possible. The reason for that is certain guns don't like certain ammunition at all, number one. Number two, you kind of want to shoot your carry ammo to see if there's a point of impact difference between that and what your target ammo is, and generally there is, but considering these stakes behind a precision shot, if you actually need to make one, probably good to practice that. You know, if I can get through 600 mixed rounds and not have any problems, it's probably fine. I will go more, but I also have access to more ammo than the average person, so there you go. Did Darkstar Gear ask us a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say they did. If someone's wife owes money all over town and your rug gets peed on because you have the same name as the husband who is responsible for said rug.
I don't know, Donnie. What do you think?
I don't know, dude.
Question for the ages right there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You want to go roll?
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Go. Yeah, yeah, go roll. It's not the Shabbos, so I think we'll be... now we're entering a world of pain.
How long can we keep going?
For a while, but we've only got a minute and a half left. So.
Okay, let's end with this one then, because I can maybe chime in a little bit. But Corey Essen wants to know about a quality defensive rifle on a budget.
Huh. Well, you can chime in on it with what you ended up buying, whether or not it ended up being quality or not. That's hard to say.
I was going to say, yeah, I never made a post about it, but I did finally buy the Minions budget.
Rifle test.
Yeah, rifle, whatever we're going to do to it, so.
Abuse it.
Yeah.
What'd you get, the Core GTO 15?
It ended up going with the Core 15.
Okay.
So.
We'll see. As far as the actual answer to that question, a budget rifle that I know does really well, Smith & Wesson M&P Sport is probably, you know, $600-$700. I've heard nothing but amazing things about them. So, anyway, next week I'm going to try, and I think I will succeed because I already asked him about it, to have Chris Costa join us to talk about his recent trip to Japan, which he's getting back from on the 15th. So, if I can't record a show with him this week, I'll get up with him after SHOT. But I know everyone wants to know about the video just burning through the internet right now and the story behind that. So, anyway, hey, I appreciate everyone listening. Check out BallisticRadio.com for past episodes and like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for listening, everyone. Be safe. See you next week.